back, everybody, to the Stark Wars podcast, where we talk all things Marvel, Star Wars, and everything in between. Please take a moment to check our show notes to find our social media, merch, and more. Today, we're recapping The Mandalorian, The Spies, and full spoiler details, so if you haven't seen the episode, I would get out of here. And listen, guys, I am here to take the best of every Star Wars podcast to make the superior Star Wars podcast in the universe, so I've invited a good friend from the Force Time podcast. It is our buddy Travis. Travis, how's it going?
Great. How you doing? I'm excited. This is a big episode.
It's a big episode. And like, I've got so much to say. I've got so much to comment on, but I'm gonna throw a wrench in all of it right now. It's something we don't really cover a lot. Like, we tend to like skip over it, but I have noticed in every episode this season, the name has a lot to do with the episode. And a lot of times it means two or three things. This is the first time. I don't know what the episode name alludes to. I have a theory for what it could mean later. But as far as this episode goes, it means nothing to me. So I need your takes on that right now up front.
So we talked about it. I just recorded my podcast for this week as well. And I talked about the armor for probably half of it. I have theories. I have thoughts.
I'm going to be slandering the armor in this episode, just by the way.
That's okay. That's okay, because I think that you might be onto something. The spies, right? Elia Kane, for sure. There's our spy number one. The Mandalorians, in quotes, maybe, that they run into just by happenstance on Mandalore. Maybe some other spies. And the armor, I have a lot of evidence that the armor might be involved in a lot of this as well. So I'm there with you for sure.
Good, because this podcast has been the number one hatred of the armor. I come on every week and I'm like, I've got my eye on you. You've got these weird rituals. You're leading a cult. I don't buy it, armor.
She has been very shady from the beginning. We don't know anything about her, really. And this season was interesting because it was like whiplash. So at the beginning of the season, it was very much leader of a cult, don't trust her, things are weird, what's going on? But then we get a couple episodes in, and she starts to open up a little bit. Oh, Bo-Katan, you can join our tribe. For me, it went from not as cultish to this is our culture, and this is how we do it, things in our culture, and I respect that, other people's cultures. But now we're at this episode, and I'm back on the... I don't think I can trust the armor, and I think we'll find out for sure next week, but she's very shady for sure.
For sure. And you know, again, I threw us right into it. Travis, this is the first time we're having you on the podcast. Again, thank you so much for joining us. Do you want to like tell some people about your podcast really quick and about you and what you're all about?
Yeah. So my name's Travis. I started Force Time, a Star Wars podcast, actually right after the Rise of Skywalker. So the sequel trilogy did a lot of good things for me. It really got me back into the fandom. The Last Jedi is like, it's my movie. Like, I love it. It really got me reinvigorated. It had me started to listen to podcasts, get back into the fandom, get on Twitter, Instagram, all this stuff. And so leading up to the Rise of Skywalker, I was going to do the movie marathon of all 9 movies, which for a new Star Wars movie, I don't 100% recommend. It was like it was a really cool experience. Got to see them all in theaters. I stayed up for all of it. A lot of people were sleeping. But I was, by the end of it, just worn out. But I decided, as a way to document it, me and my friend Nick at the time decided to document it as a podcast. And then it just kind of grew from there. I've had a lot of friends on the pod kind of at the beginning. We talked about the Clone Wars a lot. We covered each season of The Mandalorian. Season 2 and 3 of The Mandalorian. I've interviewed authors, done a lot of recaps, a lot of deep dives. We have a couple series, one called Chain Code, where we dive into a certain character. So we have an episode on Chewbacca that's 2.5 hours long, where we dive into every single little piece of his history. Same with Mace Windu. I have a series called Star Wars and Pop Culture, where we talk about Star Wars influence on different shows. So my last one was with Rachel Leishman of the Mary Sue. We talked about Star Wars influence on Parks and Rec. And so spent a lot of time on Ben Wyatt and on Patton Oswalt's character and just how it wraps into that. But we've done SNL, Weird Al, a lot of really fun episodes like that. So we kind of do a little bit of everything. We like to get very analytical. Kara, DJ, who is a zine maker, very talented friend of mine, been friends for almost 4 years. She is my co-host for our Mandalorian episodes, a lot of our recap episodes. So yeah, we kind of do just a little bit of everything on the pod.
That's awesome. I love the variety of content that you're bringing. I love the deep dives because we actually did a 2.5-hour deep dive on Jar Jar Binks, you had told me like 4 years ago that I would be hosting a Star Wars podcast where like our mascot is Jar Jar Binks, like I would have slapped you in the face, but here we are. So
I'm a big Jar Jar fan. So as you can see, he sticks his tongue out on this one. So yeah, big Jar Jar fan over here. So you got me.
Okay, so let me ask you this. This has nothing to do with the episode, because the conceit of our Jar Jar podcast was like, how is Jar Jar going to return to the Star Wars universe? So yeah. I'm going to throw that question at you. How would you like to see Jar Jar come back?
I'd love to see him in anything. I think it would be really cool if he showed up in Andor, because Andor is so serious and so not funny or lighthearted, like it's really heavy. So I think it would be cool to see him somehow sneak into that, because I think what's really fun about Star Wars is that we can have a universe where Andor exists, and we can have a universe where Lizzo and Jack Black show up in The Mandalorian as a duchess and a like royalty with this party with all these different frog people and all sorts of stuff. I think that's why Star Wars is so great, because both of those can exist. That'd be really cool. I'm not predicting that, but that would be a good way. But anytime we can get Jar Jar, I'd take it. Seeing Ahmed Best as Keller and Beck, I mean, obviously there's some ties there where Jar Jar could have helped out. So happy for Ahmed Best. So I would love to see him. I don't know if that's something that he would want to do necessarily, because that just kind of restarts a lot of the cycle. Because we even saw that when he came back as Keller and Beck. It was like, oh, Ahmed Best is having a redemption arc. It's like, he didn't do anything wrong. Like fans right. did, you know? So I would take Jar Jar in any capacity, as long as Ahmed's cool with it.
Yeah. I think that's the big question. I think that getting him on board is the biggest hurdle here, but I like that you said Andor, because here's the thing, at this point for Jar Jar, he would be in a more serious mode, right? Like he's been through a lot. He's made mistakes. Like he's lost people. And like, honestly, that's probably the vibe that might fit him now more than ever. So, you know, just throwing it out there. I would be happy to see him in Andor.
When he comes up in Andor, definitely have me back on so we can talk about it.
Okay, well, let's dive into this episode more scene by scene here. And really excited to do it with you. So, to preface this first, because I had messaged you, we had both heard, because this episode played Star Wars Celebration, the buzz was unreal, like more so than probably any other Mando episode ever. But people were just super hyped about this. So I told you, I was like, okay, listen, I'm gonna stay up. Typically I'll wake up early, watch it before work. But this time I stayed awake till 2 a.m. And boy, was that a mistake. I'll tell you right now, I was nodding off, like no testament to the show by any means. I was nodding off about halfway through. I finished it like barely. And then like the next day, everyone was talking about it. I was like, I don't remember that. I don't even remember it being that interesting. So the rewatch was much better for me.
For sure. Yeah. So much happened in that first episode. And that's actually happened a couple times in this season where I've just had to pause the episode the first time and be like, what is happening right now? Is this real? Like what's going on? And this episode, it was on that second watch. I caught a lot more, and a lot of it was very dialogue heavy, which is kind of different from most of our Mandalorian episodes. Are very action, you know, fun adventure, but this one was very they threw us a lot of information in this one, and it was so much to digest. But yeah, I had heard from my co-host Kara, she was at Celebration, got to see it early. She messaged me right after and was like, don't have this spoiled, whatever you can do to stay like away from spoilers, do it. So I muted everything on Twitter. Shout out to all the folks that got to see it early I didn't see a lot of spoilers out there. So shout out to them. And yeah, I'm glad I could unmute all those words today after I watched it. Cause yeah, I'm glad none of that was spoiled for me.
Yeah. for sure. So we open on the episode, and again, like, I'm getting like big vibes from the start. Like, it is just cool right off the bat. It's reminding me of like Blade Runner down here in Coruscant. We get Elia Kane, who's meeting up with this probe droid that has a message from Moff Gideon. And, you know, they talk about a couple different things. They mentioned this plan. Elia Kane mentions that the plan with the pirates went south, thanks to the Mandalorians. But what I found interesting was, like I'm still trying to figure out what the connective tissue is between the pirates and Moff Gideon. Because even Carson Teva in one of the previous episodes was very much tying this to the Empire. I was like, I would never suspect that these two were working together, but clearly they were in some capacity. What did you think about that?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's confirmation that they were working for Moff Gideon, which is, yeah, it just seems, again, it's that Star Wars universe. We can have this super serious Moff, and then he has this giant green, which Pirate King Gorian Shard lives, you can't change my mind, working for him to do all this dirty work for him. So I did think that was really interesting. And I know that, you know, shifting gears just a little bit, but Skeleton Crew, I think, is going to have a lot to do with pirates as well. So I think that could tie in. But it's almost like they're having them do their dirty work, because we find out that, you know, part of it is they don't want to show their strength yet. So if they had these pirates out here doing their dirty work, then they're kind of standing in the background. So in that way, it does kind of make sense to me. But yeah, we need more pirates, I think, in Star Wars for sure.
That's like one of the highlights of the season for me. I'm a big pirate guy. I don't like, I'm a writer too. I write for comic books, and I have been working on a pirate comic book for the longest time. So I'm like a big pirate guy. So
love
Star
it.
Wars pirates, like, it can't get better than that.
Yeah, I agree.
So directly after this, Moff Gideon goes back to what we learn is the Shadow Council, where he is meeting with a bunch of hidden Imperial leaders. There's a couple notable people here. We get Hux, Commandant Hux, which I don't know the exact relation, but I mean, definitely related to the Hux of the sequels.
Yeah. So Brendel is his name. He's Hux's dad. So Armitage from the sequels, he's his dad. Really cool. He's played by his brother, Domhnall Gleeson's brother in real life.
I didn't realize,
which is
that.
Really cool. Yeah, which it's funny, and I've read a couple of books with Brendel in it. So Phasma is one of my favorite books, and he plays a really big part in that. And it's funny, I always imagine him to look like Brendan Gleeson, Domhnall's dad, and so I had that image in my head. And so when I saw this guy, I was like, oh, that's cool. And then you find out later that it's his brother. But yeah, he's pretty high up there with the First Order and kind of his rise. And so that was really cool to bring him to screen for sure.
So just sticking on Hux here, one of the big things, topics of conversations, a lot of stuff comes up here in the Shadow Council, but the big thing that, well, again, there's, I can't pick one, but talking about Project Necromancer, which, you know, there's a lot of conversation about it. They talk about how this is kind of Hux's obsession. They mentioned that, like, well, if Thrawn doesn't throw up, we do have leadership in place with Project Necromancer. We even see the tanks where Moff Gideon is walking in, which I am, like, this ties into all of the cloning Snoke Sidious stuff, right?
Yeah, for sure. I got really excited about that because, yeah, it's clearly like Necromancer, like communicating with the dead to predict the future. Like, that's exactly what we see with Palpatine. One of the issues I had with The Rise of Skywalker was one of the things I speculated on so much going into that movie was, how did Palpatine return? And then we get in the movie, it's like, he returned, you know, dark magic cloning as like
somehow.
Exactly. Like somehow. So that was one of my biggest things. And one of the things I love with Star Wars is when you get an episode or you get a new piece of media that enhances how you view another piece of Star Wars media. And like right away, I was all in on Project Necromancer because I was like, I feel like that is a big thing that I would love to see explored. You know, I don't need everything explained and laid out for me in Star Wars, but that was a big one where I'm like, I think that'll help me with Tross and with how Palpatine returned and all that stuff. It just, I don't know. I was excited that they're going down that route. And, you know, Jon Favreau said a couple years ago how The Mandalorian is going to bridge the gap to the sequels. And at that time you're like, okay, well, this is The Mandalorian. This is way different, like way different than the sequels. You know, this is about this one Mandalorian, this culture has nothing to do with the Skywalkers, with the Jedi at that time, you know, or anything like that. But it's like, we're at season three now. It's like, oh no, it's going there. Like, we're seeing the First Order being built. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah. Well said. Also, another topic of conversation here is Thrawn. You know, very, haphazardly throwing that name around, talking about Thrawn's return. Gideon is like super, like, I don't think he's about Thrawn. I don't think he cares about Thrawn. Thrawn's not showing up to the meetings. He's not happy about that, which kind of like changes my entire perception about a lot of the stuff going on, like his connection with Elia Kane and the fact that he kind of got rid of Pershing. So it sounds like he kind of, you know, he wants Project Necromancer out of here. He wants Thrawn out of here. I think he wants all power, right?
That's definitely what it feels like. And yeah, I love how dismissive he is of Thrawn. And I think that that's going to come back to bite him in the ass, because we know Thrawn's coming, right? We know that he's coming in Ahsoka, and he's this looming threat. And, you know, the way that Captain, Pelion, says, you know, oh, once Thrawn returns, like, we can show our strength. And Gideon's just like, he's not even at these meet, like, what are you talking about? Like, we need new leadership. And I love Gideon for that. And I think that it makes Gideon such an interesting villain. But yeah, it's interesting that he got rid of Pershing, because they bring up the cloning aspect, and he's like, cloning's your thing. You're interested in cloning. I don't care about that. But he still got whatever he wanted from Pershing. And I'm guessing that still means Grogu's blood, DNA, whatever he took from Grogu. But what overall is he using that for is the question, you know? And I think we get that a little bit skipping to the end of the episode, where he says, I'm going to take the best of the Jedi, the cloners, the Mandalorians, and create this big army. To me, for sure, you hit it on the nose that, like, he wants all the power. I think he either is already maybe force sensitive, this is kind of galaxy brain, or he still wants to be, because he wants all this power, because he's used the cloner, you know, Pershing, he's used him for whatever. He's got his Mandalorian armor. What do the Jedi have? You know, it's the Force. And so I feel like that's where, like, that's his grand plan. I don't know how far he'll get in that plan, but I think that that might be what he's looking for.
Yeah, I think you said it best. Like, this does not look good for him. You don't go nose-to-nose with Thrawn like this. I totally see a situation when Thrawn does show up, whenever that might be, Thrawn just tosses this guy aside immediately, like, maybe in his first scene, like, we have no need for you. So,
right. Yeah. Or he heard him talking about, you know, like, he probably listening in on these meetings. Like, if we're being serious, you know, Captain Pelion, like, he knows he's out there. Mm-hmm. He might've directly heard that and see how he's acting, and known that he's been doing his own cloning experiments and all this stuff on Navarro. So yeah, I don't think it's going to go well. I do hope we get more Gideon in the future, because I think Giancarlo Esposito is so good. Like, I just want him in everything. But yeah, I don't think that's the route that he should necessarily be taking.
For sure. So let's go to this next scene here, where the Mandalorian fleet is arriving on Navarro. Very cool fleet here. They have, like, the symbol on the ship, which, like, super cool visual coming in here. But they land, and they're all coming together. And the other Mandalorians, they meet with the convert, and they, like, immediately take their helmets off, which, like, to me, I'm like, that's an act of war, you know? Like, y'all are just rubbing it in now. That was bold, I think.
It was. And Din, the way that Din, like, moves his helmet, it's like he's embarrassed. He's like, already? Like, you couldn't wait 10 minutes to take your damn helmets off? Like, I thought that was so funny, too. That's a good call. Yeah.
But Greef Karga is there as well, and he gives him what looks to be like a bottle of liquor, which is interesting. I don't know if that's going to come back. I don't know. Like, if they wanted, like, I feel like the big plot device was the next gift he gives, but, like, the fact that he gave him, you know, whatever, spirits or some drink beverage, I don't know. It was weird. Like, you didn't have to do both of those. So I think we're going to get him popping the bottle at the end.
I totally agree. They don't do anything just, like, for no reason. It was kind of pointed, and yeah, no, that's a good call. I don't know why else he would have, like, we've never seen that in Star Wars. Like,
Grogu's getting drunk, baby.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, but the next gift we get here, I was super excited about. This is somebody that, like, we had teased could possibly return, and, like, I was sad that it wasn't a possibility. Well, we get this character that walks out. It is IG-11, and IG-11 is being controlled like a mech with the Anzellan inside, whether it's Babu Frick or not. And we find out this is now IG-12. He has been refurbished into some sort of vessel for small creatures to control. This is awesome. I loved this.
It was so good. It another one of those, like, would have never expected that's how they were going to do it. It makes so much sense now that, looking back, it's like we had the Anzellans that are exactly Grogu's size, and it all comes back around. But yeah, this whole scene was hilarious. And we needed that. We needed this scene for this heavy, heavy episode, because from that point, it's like, it gets really heavy. So I'm glad that we got a little bit of comic relief to kind of break up some of the seriousness of everything. And yeah, just seeing Grogu tell Din no was worth it.
Yeah. So next time Tommy annoys me, I can play this sound clip. Bad baby. No, it's crazy. Yeah. I got a lot of good sound clips out of this episode.
I love it. Actually. Yeah, that's great.
I also got this one.
Yes, 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 yes.
Which I'll just play when I agree. So yeah. Next time you go on a rant that I'm with you on.
Perfect. Yes. Yep.
Again, very fun scene here. I feel like we didn't get enough action out of him. Like, IG-11 was a badass. And is there weapon functionality in this thing at all that Grogu can use? I don't know.
That's the question for sure. Like, is he going to be able to pick up blasters and turn the head around and do all this stuff? Because yeah, we saw him progressively as the episode went along, get a little bit better at it, right? That first scene, he's stumbling around, and then when they're walking the street, he's walking pretty good and he grabs the thing. And then when they're, you know, at the end, when they're going towards the Great Forge, Din is like, you have to keep up with us. And they're like sprinting and like, he's keeping up. So he's getting it pretty quick. So I think that maybe next episode we really see some weaponry come out for Grogu.
Yeah, we'll give him some time to warm up. This is his practice episode.
For sure.
A lot of fun stuff in the streets here where Grogu, I feel like at least three times a season we get a scene where he's stealing food or eating something he's not supposed to. We get another good one here. That's always fun.
Yeah, I like that they bring the Mailaroon back from Rebels and everything that we've seen there. But yeah, he's just always hungry. And I'm like, are you feeding him at his normal times? Like, are you paying attention, Dad? You know?
Yeah, you don't ever see, like, I guess a couple times, but very rarely is Din providing dinner. So
yeah.
We're actually about to go to a feast. So
maybe. Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of a feast, that next scene where the Night Owls are all eating out in front of everybody, and the Children of the Watch are just watching them in disgust. They're like, what are you doing? Like, oh, this is gross. Why do I have to watch you eat? Because they don't do that. I thought that contrast was really funny.
Yeah. It kind of divulges into, their plan here. They're going to retake their home world. Bo-Katan kind of sets up. And Bo-Katan also wants, like, a small team to do it. And this is where, like, you know, when she's asking for volunteers, basically, I was like, okay, so all like the main characters are, you know, you get Costa Reeves, Axe Woves, Paz, all the important people step up. So,
yeah, important to bring them. And then, the armor is the last one, and which I'll wait for my armor theory just a little bit longer. But it's interesting how all of this plan comes together at the same time that Gideon already knows that they're going to go retake Mandalore, because in the first scene with Elia Kane, she doesn't tell him that the Mandalorians are planning on retaking Mandalore now. She just says they're working together. To Moff Gideon, that means to me is that he knows the plan is in motion, because all of this just feels like a giant trap. And so the armor is really who you have to watch this entire episode. The camera lingers on her a little bit too long here and there. We'll get to the part later with like the pirate Mandalorians that maybe aren't Mandalorians come in. But yeah, the way that the camera stays on the armor specifically in this scene too is like something. And I, on the second watch is when I noticed that, I was like, something's up here. Maybe
same here. And the fact that I was falling asleep didn't help the first time.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, they drop into the planet here, and this is where they're gonna begin their search. But they are kind of, you mentioned, they are encountered by another this is a pirate ship to me. They have another pirate ship that comes up, full of Mandalorians, and you know they're looking for food. They're excited to see Bo-Katan. I don't know about you. I'm a big Breaking Bad guy, so yes, seeing 100% Skinny Pete. And it kind of goes to show that, you know, maybe don't trust Skinny Pete, but we'll
for sure. No, 100%. When I saw him, I was so happy. I'm ready for all the other characters to come through because Breaking Bad, like outside of Star Wars stuff, is probably my favorite TV series of all time. And yeah, now that we got Giancarlo, we got Skinny Pete, I'm ready for the rest of them. Yeah.
Yeah, we're getting a full reunion here. So so they end up having another feast here, ironically, and they talk about a lot of different things. This is where Bo-Katan kind of lays out how she lost the Darksaber. She says that she surrendered to Moff Gideon, and he stabbed her in the back. So, I don't know. Did you take anything away from that?
I thought it was interesting that we got this story because we never really knew how Gideon came to get the Darksaber. This makes a lot of sense thinking about it. I love that like Din was raised thinking the complete opposite of Bo-Katan and like he had no idea. So I think it was good to get that story told to everybody on the ship because you could tell the Children of the Watch, like they had no idea that's what happened. And they've had this other view of the Children of the Watch of the Night Owls their whole lives. And like that just kind of flips it on its head. So I'm glad we got that just for anything else, we now know how Moff Gideon got the Darksaber. Cause we think of Moff Gideon as this big, bad villain. Well, he didn't win it in combat. He didn't beat Bo-Katan with a spear or something, you know, it's like, no, he overtook Mandalore with his forces and made her give it to him. So that it kind of adds to, you know, Moff Gideon going back to about Din, like you had the Darksaber, but it's about the story. It's not about like how you get it. Like when he tried to give it to Bo-Katan in season two, it's like Moff Gideon doesn't even have that good of a story, you know, getting it. It's like, oh, you just like completely bombed their planet and took it from her. Like that's not that great of a story either. So I'm glad we got it just for that confirmation. And I think it's going to lead to possibly another confrontation between Bo and Moff Gideon next episode too.
Yeah. One of the big things I love here when they're, you know, on the ship and even actually later or earlier when they're, before they drop in, somebody made a comment about how rough Mandalore looks. And one of the Night Owls is like, I was there, you know? So yeah. There's kind of like this tension between, and like there's even this moment coming up here with Bo and Mando where Mando kind of speaks as if, you know, he has an equal grudge that she does. And even I was like, you know, not really though, you know, not exactly. So I don't know. Like, I don't know if there's any tension. I mean, there's obviously a lot of tension between the two, but like the fact that not only a lot of these people didn't go through the same things they did. And I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, it really hammered home the point of Bo-Katan's trauma, because we see that a lot in the Clone Wars and Rebels. She's been through it, and this just adds to her tragedy, right? And it's so depressing that after everything we saw her go through in animation, that also she went through this, and she had to make that decision. She made what she thought was the right decision, or the only decision she could make in surrendering, and it still didn't matter. So, yeah, I do agree, because the Children of the Watch, They went to the Moon of Concordia. They weren't there for it. They kind of fleed, it sounds like, and kind of formed their own little faction, you know, kind of a breakoff group of Death Watch, which seems like the armor has been leading them this whole time, which, again, armor being kind of shady. But yeah, I really like Din's line of, you know, your song hasn't been written yet. And it's basically saying like, that's just it's just like a beautiful sentiment as a human, you know, like you're not dead yet. You can still make different decisions. You can still do all this stuff. So I did really like that conversation, but you're right. Like he hasn't been through it. Like Bo-Katan has been through it. Like Bo-Katan has been through it.
Yeah, exactly. So, let's see here. So next, okay. So did you have something?
One more thing about the being on the ship at night. After that scene, right. And maybe you're getting there, but this is where the armor stuff comes up. Bo-Katan is like, hey, we're gonna go tomorrow. We're gonna give everyone a break tonight. We'll sleep through the night. We'll go into the Great Forge tomorrow. The armorer says, these Mandalorians are sick and someone needs to take them up to the fleet. I'll do it. They're going to the Great Forge. Like it's gotta be like heaven for an armorer. Like that is the armorer's den, the Great Forge. And she's the one that is volunteering. To take these sick Mandalorians that they just happen to run into. And in this scene too, the camera stays on her just a little bit. We get that scene where she hands the one the medicine. And it's like, we didn't even know these guys were sick. We knew they wanted food, but it just seemed really weird. And to me, it like lends to that theory that she is also one of the spies, that she's working for Moff Gideon. I don't want to get too far off on other tangents.
Talk about it all right now. Okay. Let's deep dive on armor. Here.
So I had kind of a, you know, like the usual suspects moment where at the end where it like Kaiser Soze is like at the end, they're putting all the pieces together and they keep going back further in the movie of like, oh, this happened. Oh my God, it all makes sense. Okay. So Mandalore, the armor has told us that Mandalore is poisoned. She has told all her children of the watch that it's poison. It's not clearly like not at all. And she's basically keeping them off planet. None of them are going to want to go back there. Din didn't even want to go back there because like to bathe in the living waters because he thinks it's poison. So she's kept her group of Mandalorians off of this planet for years and years and years and years. We see later there's a giant base that has been built that had to take years and years and years to build by Moff Gideon. The armor also is like hoarding this Beskar. Like we're getting little pieces here and there. Anything that we can find, we get to the foundlings, all this stuff. Obviously there's a ton of Beskar on Mandalore because of what we see that Moff Gideon has done. It just seems too obvious that Moff Gideon knew they were going to retake Mandalore like now. He wasn't told that on screen by anybody, but he knows it. That's why he requests the Praetorian guards. He requests the bombers. He didn't request that just because he knew that the two Mandalorian factions were teaming up. Like he wasn't going to take the fight to them. He was bringing them to Mandalore. So he had this all set up. I don't see any other, like if you have any ideas and Kara had a couple that she threw at me and I was able to like come up with the reason. No, like the armor did this. And I could be wrong, next week we'll see, but there's so much evidence of the armor being the spy or being someone that's working for Moff Gideon, bringing them in, that it almost makes too much sense. Like maybe it's too obvious. She has the horns on her helmet. Like that's always been a thing, right? I don't know. There's a lot, and I'll let you take it from here so I can collect my thoughts. But I kept going back in seasons and be like, oh, she did this in this season. Why did she do this? Like she sent Din to the living waters. You have to bathe in those so you can be redeemed. She knew that him and Bo-Katan knew each other. He stopped and picked up Bo-Katan on his way there so she could help him. And then what happens when they go back to her house or her mansion or her castle? It gets blown up by, now we know, Gideon's TIE interceptors. And so that sets in motion Bo-Katan having to join the Children of the Watch, the armor being very friendly. Hey, you bathe in the living waters too. You can join us. And the armor switches so quick on Bo-Katan and the helmet thing. It's like she runs one mission for her, does a really good job. And all of a sudden she says, you can take off your helmet. And then she says, you know what you should do? You should go get all the other Mandalorians and bring them here. And then we'll go retake Mandalore. So the armor technically gathered all the Mandalorians and took them to Mandalore. And then they find these pirates. She volunteers to go up. Makes too much sense for me.
Yeah, no, I think you laid it out really good. And even I was like, because I've said it before. I've said it almost every single week. Never trust the armor. I don't like the armor. I think she's mean. So like the fact that like, there, like, there's a lot more solid evidence in this episode. I still kind of like sit here and wonder, like, when that reveal, like, let's flash forward a week. When that reveal happens, is there going to be enough for everybody, the casual audience, people aren't looking into theories and breaking all this stuff down? Is there going to be enough for people to buy into this?
Right. That's a great question. Yeah. Because yeah, to me again, like going back
it's
to
subtle.
It is very subtle. And there's no obvious, like I say it's obvious, but that's if you're a nerd like us and you like dig into every little motion and every little thing they say. But
yeah, like my mom is going to be so confused.
No, for sure. I totally agree with that. And I don't think Star Wars would do it, but I think that if any director could, Rick Famuyiwa could do it and pull it off of like Din having flashbacks in his head of like the armorer said this and the armor did this and like, why did the armor do that? You know, like where you get that flashback series of events that it all like comes to him and he's like, oh my God, you know, like how did I not see it? But yeah, I think you're right. Like there's not enough, but it would be surprising. And it is a season finale and they like to shock people. Luke Skywalker showed up at the end of season two. There was a little bit of evidence of maybe that's coming, but you know, I don't know it. Yeah, it's interesting.
I don't disagree with it. I'm just wondering, yeah, like, what are the methods they're going to go through? And I think you played it out well. I think the flashback is the only way to do it. I think you have to show people and remind them. So that is definitely on my bingo board for the finale.
Yeah, she's shady. I want to fast forward to next Wednesday just to, like, see what happens because I'm just so intrigued. And like I said, could be way off and I'm not right at all. And the armor comes in and, like, helps save the day. And great, but just too much. Too much things have happened for me not to think that she's the spy. So I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. Last question on the armor stuff, because this thought just came to me. Is anybody else in the watch on board with her? Possibly. Is there a chance that she has put this together with everybody and it's just against the Night Owls?
There's a possibility. The only reason I would say that she's kind of working alone is that it's kind of goes back to Gideon. So at the beginning of the episode, Gideon, he acts really surprised that the Mandalorians are working together. Almost too surprising. He's almost too specific of like, how could that be? Like those two factions hate each other. Like, how is that a thing? And Kara brought that up. Like, no, he seemed surprised. Like, I don't think this is part of his plan. Elia Kane is working in the New Republic right now. She is very low on his totem pole because you can tell right away how he's talking to her, where he's just like, I don't have much time. Like, just tell me what's going on, you know? And then she gives him the information. She's like, he's like, okay, see ya. He's like, oh, you know, kind of act surprised. So I don't think that he would tell Elia Kane like, oh, perfect. Like our plan's coming together. Like, I don't think he wants her to have that information. I think it's kind of the same on the armor's end. Like she probably doesn't want anyone else on her side, like on the inside, like she's got to be the one. I think it would be interesting if she had someone else working for her, but I don't think we know like many, you know, that would be surprising because none of the characters are like, you know, Paz Vizsla was the one that was like really a standout and obviously he's not going to be around, but yeah, I don't know. That would be an interesting route. And this would be like a genius, like Palpatine level plan. If it like, this is really a long play for the armor. So that's my one thing where I'm like, are they really going to do that? Where it's like, she's been leading them for years, but Gideon, and I have a whole theory about Gideon possibly at one point being a Mandalorian. And that's why he's so obsessed with Mandalore. So my wheels are spinning and I'm just kind of all over the place. And it's funny because before this episode, like we love to speculate on my show and we speculate a lot, but like, this is the one that like just set us off the rails. We're just like, it could be anything at this point.
Yeah. So, all right. So the next scene we get here, is a cute little scene. I don't have a whole lot to say. We do get the scene of, Axe Woves and Paz playing some sort of chess game here. And they end up, arguing of the rules and fighting. I think the big takeaway for me here was, it was kind of just a metaphor for everything going on between the two factions. You know, they're literally disagreeing against the rules as they do like their culture and everything. So I don't know. Was there any, like, anything for you in this little fight scene?
Yeah, no, it hammered home that theme for sure. Like you said, of we're stronger together, that kind of thing. I like that Grogu was the one to stop them. And, you know, Bo is like, you've taught your apprentice well. And he says, he didn't learn that from me, where the scene before we get Bo-Katan giving this speech of like, we're stronger together. you know, we can't be defeated if we work together. And like Grogu's watching all that. So like Grogu, you know, could be getting that from Bo-Katan, which is really cool. Kara on my show that we just recorded, she brought up a really good point that he could have got that from Luke. You know, there's alternatives to fighting. There's, you know, like we shouldn't be having this infighting. It could be like a Jedi thing too. So yeah, it was definitely like, it was very on the nose of like, yeah, we get it. Like these factions don't like each other. It's cool that Grogu's like that balance, but yeah, no, I was kind of the same way.
Yeah. So, I think, next year is where things really start heating up, and, they are flying towards the Great Forge. And this is where this giant kaiju type monster comes up and kind of wrecks their stuff. I just want to say like, I can't put into words what this episode has done for me as a Star Wars fan. So I'm going to go back in time a little bit. I used to go to summer camp, right? And it was a 3-week overnight summer camp. And, you know, you could get mail, right? Your parents could send you gifts or whatever. So I get packages every once in a while. The big thing my dad always did is he would send me comic books. And I wasn't like big into the comic books at the time. But the problem was he would send me comic books that are like, this is like issue 54 of The Punisher. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. Yeah. So like, I kind of look at the pictures, whatever. There was one point he sent me a comic book. I wish I knew what comic it is now, but it was a Star Wars comic. And I was flipping through it. And what I saw was Mandalorians, a group of Mandalorians in a battle. And there was hundreds of them and they were fighting. And I was like, at that point, my only exposure to Mandalorians was Boba Fett and Jango Fett, right? So, like, I was like, and those were, like, my favorite characters. So I was like, the fact that there are, like, hundreds, thousands, whatever, an army of Mandalorians, I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. And, like, seeing this scene with the monster busting them and they're, like, flying all over the place and escaping and, like just seeing many Mandalorians together like this, it was like a moment that I hadn't felt since I was a kid where I was like, this is what I wanted. This is what I wanted from the Mandalorian the entire time. So I had to gush on this for a second. This is my favorite part. And it just, you know, it felt so Star Wars to me in the best way.
I love that. I love how you broke that down. Because yeah, this scene, it felt like a comic book page too. And, you know, it didn't have to happen in this episode, but the fact that like it, and all, at the same time, it wouldn't be a Mandalorian episode without a giant monster, or like, it wouldn't be a battle without a giant monster come out. Cause we've gotten so many of these giant monsters. But yeah, I love how you break that down of like all these, and it's the Mandalorians on both sides. And this is really the first time we see them kind of together that they have to like escape this. So no, that's great. That's yeah. I love that. You used to get comic books at summer camp. That's incredible.
Yeah. So yeah, that those are the early seeds of me becoming a massive nerd. So
yeah, for sure.
So I got a question about this though, because it's so random that this monster comes out, he kind of wrecks the ship, they fly out and escape. But like that can't be all we're getting from this monster. And my guess is, do we get a kaiju fight with the Mythosaur and this thing later in the finale, even maybe? Do you think do we see this guy again?
That's a great call. Because again, the scene didn't have to happen, but Bo-Katan at the beginning was like, there are dormant species down there. Like, we don't know. But yeah, that's something we really didn't get into too much, was the Mythosaur of it all, because that was like a huge thing early in the season. And then we haven't heard too much lately. Obviously we haven't been back on Mandalore till now, but the Mythosaur, like, right, 100% has come in play. And definitely seeing this monster, it's like they didn't just throw that in for no reason. I agree that's got to come back up again, I think.
Yeah, we'll put a pin on that one for sure.
Yeah, so, for sure.
They end up going to in underground towards the Forge, and this is where they get ambushed conveniently by these Imperial Beskar armor wearing soldiers. Again, another really awesome fight scene here. What do you think of these guys? These stormtroopers with Beskar, basically.
They, again, like straight out of a comic book page, right? I mean, they were terrifying, because the way that it was shot is very specific. Like, the blaster bolts weren't doing anything to them. So it was really cool to see them in action, because it was that mix of like, you know, these things weren't cloned that we know of, you know, they were either dark troopers or people, whatever it is. But it did have that mix of like clone trooper and Mandalorian armor, and they were like flying around and stuff. So it was like, it felt like it was Moff Gideon's army, like getting closer and closer to what he wants. But yeah, they were, I mean, they were right there waiting for him. It was very like, okay, it's a trap. Like, we know it's a trap, that like, there's no other explanation. They were ready for it. And I love that, like, it doesn't do too much damage on them, but then they retreat and lead them further into the trap. And yeah, I don't know. They were really cool to look at. Definitely terrifying for sure. How many of them there were, and the fact that the Mandalorians, like these awesome warriors, didn't have too much of an effect unless they were like hand-to-hand combat, which we see a lot of really good Din and Bo action in that scene too. But yeah, no, it was a surprise that it happened so quickly for me.
Yeah, and this is where they get led deeper into the hive here, where our good buddy Moff Gideon shows up here in stunning armor. I love, he's still got the cape.
Yeah.
The helmet, which, by the way, we didn't mention this in the armor theory, but, you know, look at those horns, baby.
Yeah,
same thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Birds of a feather flock together. That's all I'm saying.
For sure. Yeah. He looked so cool. Oh, my God. He had, like, the red on his helmet, too. It was very, like, you know, the Shadow Collective, like, Maul kind of look from the Clone Wars. Oh, man. He's the coolest. And Giancarlo Esposito, just in general, is the coolest. But seeing him in this armor and take his helmet off and saying, like, I made all these upgrades to it, and the best upgrade that's about this is that I'm inside of it.
That was
awesome. How cool is he? I mean, I love him.
Yeah. So a lot of stuff happens here, and it happens fast. This is one thing I didn't pick up on my 2 a.m. viewing, was that, like, we actually end here. The Mandalorian Din Djarin is captured. They just take him away, and that's what we're left on. So, yeah, we're going to... it would be interesting, because, like, so often in this show, especially in finales, it's about Din getting Grogu back. It'll be interesting to see if we get Grogu getting Din back.
I love that parallel. I love it so much. And seeing Grogu's sad little face just was like, and Bo, like, was shaken up a little bit, and the way that, like, they take down Din, but it's like slow motion kind of, you know, how they're like getting him with all the different cords and everything. Yeah, that was super sad. I am very interested to see next week. And I'm also interested to see why Moff Gideon wants him alive. Is he still trying to lure Grogu? Does he need Grogu for something else? Does he know that that'll bring Bo-Katan out, you know, if they do get away, which we'll talk about. But yeah, that was it was terrifying seeing it through Grogu's eyes. And yeah, you're right. That, like, it took me back to season two when Din, like, you can't see his eyes, but when the dark troopers take Grogu, like, you can feel it through his helmet of how terrified he is in that moment.
Right. So that'll be interesting. Another one here, we have to say goodbye to our good buddy Paz Vizsla, who, you know, comes from a very famous lineage. Luckily, we did get his son introduced, so the Vizsla name will live on.
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't have any strong feelings towards Paz, to be honest, so it's what it is.
Yeah, at this moment, you know, when the Praetorian Guards come out, obviously, being a Last Jedi, like, huge Last Jedi fan, I was, you know, the fact that they called them Praetorian Guards, because the first time that we got that was Last Jedi. Obviously, it's kind of the bridge between the Imperial Guards from the original trilogy, even going back to, you know, the prequels with the Red Guards. But just seeing them come out, the way it was shot, slow motion, I didn't want Paz to die by any means, but I really wanted to see the Praetorians, like, have their moment and take him down and see how powerful they were. Because, kind of like I talked about it earlier, you know, when something in Star Wars happens that enhances your love of something else in Star Wars, like, this also, like, enhances an already, like, the throne room scene is top five easily for me of any scene. Just that whole confrontation with Rey, Kylo, and Snoke.
I'll give it a top three, baby.
Yeah, I love it. It's so good. And like, I get goosebumps thinking about it, because like that moment is my top like theater moment of all time. Like being in the theater for that and the people cheering for it was so good. But I stood up
out of my seat. Yeah, shouted. Yeah,
so. I love it. The gasps that everyone got when the lightsaber went through Snoke and they go back to back is just like. Such a good moment. And somehow this even enhances that. Next time I watch Last Jedi, I'll be like, oh, those Praetorian guards, like they kick ass big time. Like, yeah, the three of them took down Paz Vizsla, but they did it in like 15 seconds. You know, it was like clockwork. And the fact that Rey and Kylo went up against six and the way that they did it, it enhances that love. But I'm glad the Praetorian guards got that moment. That was so cool. RIP Paz. This also, going back to The Last Jedi, this, if you ever listen to my show, I can tie anything back to The Last Jedi. So here's another one. Paz Vizsla sacrifices himself and he's basically, hey, you guys go out the back, like you go this way. I'll take care of this. I'll cover you. I mean, it's that parallel on a smaller scale of Luke and The Last Jedi. I'm going to go out here. I'll face them down. You go escape out the back. And I'm glad that Paz got that moment too. Like it was a really cool way to go out. Is that after all is said and done, that could have been the one thing that saved Mandalore in the end. You know, we'll see how Mandalore, if it, you know, eventually gets rebuilt, which I'm guessing that's where they're going with all this stuff. But you know, what a great moment to go out on.
Yeah. He needs a statue like IG-11. Yeah, it, so,
for sure.
And that is, you know, the Praetorian guards again, big fan of Last Jedi as well. Awesome to see them. You know, what else? I'm trying to see. I feel like something else. Yeah.
I do have one other thing. So we also get that great parallel with Moff Gideon and Bo-Katan. So they have that conversation where she's like, I should have killed you. And he's like, you know, you should give me back the Darksaber, like what's rightfully mine, which again, kind of leans back into my, why is that rightfully yours? Why are you so obsessed with the Darksaber? Like, why do you want to overtake Mandalore so bad? Unless there's some ties there in his past. But also I really loved how he says, we'll send out the silencers and the bombers so we can catch their fleet off guard. And Bo is stuck behind this blast door, helpless. She can't do anything about it. And she screams, no. It's very reminiscent of Return of the Jedi with the Emperor showing Luke like, oh, we lured your fleet into a trap. We're going to, you know, blow up all these ships. And very reminiscent of The Last Jedi with Snoke and Rey where, oh, we lured these ships, right? You know, or we're going to destroy the last of these ships. So it had that feel to it. And just like, you could feel that pain in Bo's voice. That was like so intense. And it just adds to her tragedy because when they got to the planet and they first get off that ship, Bo-Katan has a smile on her face. We never see that. She's excited. She thinks we're here. We're going to retake Mandalore. Like, wow, what a great day. I've united them. It's time again. And then like 2 minutes later, she's screaming no. And she knows that the fleet is basically set up in a trap too. So that was another really good part of that last scene.
So, okay. You know, we've talked about the armor a lot, but there's something I didn't really think about. If she knew of this plan in some respect, wouldn't she realize that the fleet is probably as much danger as going into the forge?
Yeah, for sure. I think the way that she says it with, so when she goes back up to the planets, or sorry, when she goes back up to space and she gets in communication with the Mandalore ship and she's like, hey, I have these Mandalorians, or you know, they're sick or whatever, they need medics, I'm gonna come bring them in. I think that could mean I'm gonna drop them off and then I'm gonna go do my own thing. Okay. I don't see her fleeing, but does she go meet up with Moff Gideon somewhere? I don't know. That's a good call. That's my explanation for it. Like I said, I'll come
again.
Up
with I don't want to poke holes in that. Yeah.
I'm glad you are, because we need to poke holes, because I need someone to tell me I'm crazy and like talking off the ledge. But that's a good call. That's a good call. Yep.
Well, all right, Travis, what did I skip over? Anything else you want to touch on?
Axe Wolves.
Yeah.
What's he going to do? He escaped through the hole in the wall.
That's right.
And, you know, he tells Bo, like, I need to go alert the fleet. The only thing is that, is he going to go through all that electrical interference just with his jetpack? Is that possible? Maybe it is. Maybe it's just like flying through a thunderstorm for a Mandalorian. But we don't know where he ended up either. So that'll be interesting next week to see if like he made it to the fleet and was able to like alert them a little bit ahead of time, so they know maybe they can get the foundlings out or, you know, something like that. But yeah, that the Axe Wolves, like that little moment where Paz Vizsla covers him so he can escape. We don't know where Axe Wolves is either. So that'll be an interesting thread to tie up next week.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't even write that down in my notes for some reason. That
it happened so quick.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a good question. We'll have to see what's going on there.
Yeah.
Well, Travis, this was such a blast talking to you, theorizing, nerding out. We do something to close our show here, and I didn't prepare you, so I apologize.
It's all good.
But one thing I like to do to close out the show is recommend something that you've either been watching, reading, listening to, anything that's not necessarily Star Wars related that you want to tell people about to check out, something to recommend. And I'll go first to buy you time to think about
perfect,
it.
Perfect.
So I watched two movies this week that I've been told to watch 100 times, and it took me forever to get to them. But I finally watched The Raid and The Raid 2, which are just about my most favorite action movies ever now. If you have not seen these movies, check them out. If you're a John Wick fan, I think that these movies are better than the John Wick franchise. I like the story of these movies a lot more. And for the uninitiated, it is very much in the same vein of like just heavy action all the time. It leans on martial arts a lot, which is cool. I believe, is it a Korean movie? I'm not sure. It's definitely, you know, you'll have to put the subtitles on, but listen, it is like one of the biggest thrill rides, and just watching it back to back. I said that I feel like, so I'm on Letterboxd. I don't know if you know what Letterboxd is, but you review movies on there. And I went to go see what people that I follow thought about the movie. And a lot of people were down on the second movie, but I was like, this is a 5 out of 5 star movie.
Yeah.
And my quote was, this is the Godfather 2 of action movies. And I truly believe that it is such good movies. So that is my recommendation for the week. If you have not seen the Raid movies, check those out. So Travis, I will throw it to you now.
Nice. I actually saw someone on my Twitter talking about that literally tonight, and I was like, oh, I should check that out. So I need to watch
it on Netflix.
Yeah, perfect. I'm gonna cheat. I'm gonna do one Star Wars and one non-Star Wars.
Okay, cool.
So speaking of movies that I just saw, I just took my 8-year-old daughter to the Super Mario Brothers movie. And
it was so
fun, and I think the powers that be that made this movie knew exactly what they were doing. I grew up on NES playing Mario and Super Mario 3 specifically. You know, 2 was okay, but 1 and 3, like, I played that every day growing up. My daughter has a Switch. We play Super Mario all the time. We play Mario Kart, we play Super Mario. And so for us to share that moment was really just special. And like, it was so fun and just like lighthearted, and like it moved really, really, really fast. Like it didn't take any downtime. It was just like boom, 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 boom. There's, you know, a reason it like shattered all these records for box office, for animated movies and everything. I thought it was so fun. Jack Black is just, I mean, he's incredible, right? The dude can do anything. He was born for Bowser. So that was my movie recommendation. We have a 7-month old at home too, so we don't get a lot of time to watch movies. We actually just started, there's a show on Netflix. I'm going to have to just quickly look it up. With Rob Lowe, it's called Unstable, and we're a couple episodes in, and it's pretty funny. We're gonna try to give it a shot, get through the whole episode. So there's two non-Star Wars.
I gotta talk on the Mario thing real quick.
Yeah,
this is a weird experience for me. So I took my son, and the weird thing is he's 3. He doesn't know what Mario is.
Yeah.
So, but like a couple of days before the movie, right before we went to go see it, he goes, "I want to watch Mario." I'm like, "How do you know what Mario is? You don't even." Yeah. And I was like, he was mad. He really wanted to watch Mario. I was like, I didn't even like you. Where'd you learn about Mario? Anyways, I pull up YouTube videos, and he's watching like Mario Party. People play Mario Party. He's like,
oh, blue. Yeah.
So like his love of Mario started like less than a week before we saw the movie. And then And then we ended up buying, I don't even know what game we bought on the Switch, but we bought him a game too. So he's, that's his first video game now. He's been playing Mario, and like within a week, he's been watching the YouTube videos. He's been playing the game, it. And he saw the movie. So brand new Mario fan here. I second the recommendation, especially if you have a kid. It's fun.
It was so fun, and it was fun. Like during the movie, my daughter would lean over and she'd be like, "Oh, like there's Donkey Kong. Like I know him from Mario Kart." Or like there's a Mario Kart scene. Basically, I'm not gonna get too spoilery if you haven't seen it, but it's very similar to the game. And she was like nudging me on the elbow, and it was fun for both of us. And she had been looking forward to it for so long, and it was such a cool experience. It was very nostalgic for me.
So that now my son's going to be that kid that's going to see Donkey Kong and be like, "Oh, that's the guy from the movie."
From the movie. Yeah, I know. He's from Super Mario. Well, yeah, he is. Yeah. So yeah, I love it. Okay. So I'm going to shift gears. I'm going to go to my Star Wars recommendation. You talked about comic books earlier. Okay. I'm going to take that. Dr. Aphra. It's my agenda, if you follow me on social media, to get everyone to read Dr. Aphra, the current run. First run is great too. That was done a few years ago, but the current run by Alyssa Wong is incredible. It's so good. It just keeps getting better and better and better. I'm a big Alyssa Wong fan.
You interviewed her, right?
I did. So I had them on the show back in December, and actually plug for the show, check out the feed in a couple weeks. Dr. Aphra, we're through issue 30 now that just came out Wednesday. Also, Alyssa Wong just released Ewoks, the one-shot comic, Return of the Jedi celebration episode. And it is really great. And I 100% recommend it. That's my Star Wars recommendation. If you haven't, check out Dr. Aphra. Definitely get Ewoks because like it's Ewoks. Come on, like it's a one-shot. Go ahead and grab it. But yeah, Dr. Aphra, I will spread that agenda everywhere I can. And yeah, check out in a couple weeks, Alyssa Wong returning to the show.
There you go. So I gotta say, I like the comics. I did dive in a little bit. So what was they had like this crossover arc, the War of the Bounty Hunters or something? Is that what it was called?
Yeah. So they have a few different runs going on right now. They have Bounty Hunters. They have Star Wars, just like the main run, which tells a story between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi with like our main heroes. So we have Star Wars. We have Bounty Hunters. I'm going to miss one. We have Dr. Aphra. And then we had a big story with Kira as well that tied in kind of a lot of this as well, Crimson Rain. The War of the Bounty Hunters crossover was really fun. It brought all of those runs together. And it's one of those too where it seems really daunting to like get into, especially War of the Bounty Hunters, like that crossover. I mean, it was an entire run on its own, you know, it was like 30 to 40 issues, I'm sure. So it seems like a lot, but all of these, in my opinion, and I don't keep up with a lot of the other ones, like Dr. Aphra is my main one. It works on its own too. You know, you don't have to read the other ones.
Because that got me interested. I was like, okay, crossover thing. This seems like a good time to jump in. I found like the graphic that kind of breaks down which ones you don't read. But then I got to it, I was like, I can't just read like 11 and 12 of Aphra. I have to. So like I started all of Aphra and got to the point, and then I would move on to the next one and got to the point, and I overwhelmed myself way too much. And I actually stopped reading. So I got to catch back up.
Yeah. It's a lot. And that's why I kind of stick with Aphra. Cause I'm like, comics take 10 minutes to read. And they're, you know, $4 a pop. So it's like a very cheap collector thing too. But if you get into all the different series, then it's like very time consuming and very expensive. So I stick with the Aphra one. And then, some of the like one shots I'll get for sure. And some of the mini series that are like take place in this timeline too. And then they just announced at Star Wars Celebration that they're having another tie-in event. I think it's Dark Droids. Is what they're calling it. Basically, like a bunch of droids are taking over and wreaking havoc amongst all these different runs. And so those are all going to kind of tie into. So yeah,
it's all an episode similar to that recently.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it rings a bell. But yeah, no, Aphra, if you're going to start with anything, listeners, I recommend Dr. Aphra 2020. You can really start with any arc. I do really love the first arc. It introduces you, to new characters that are in this run. It kind of reintroduces you to Aphra. But you can, I mean, the way that Alyssa Long writes it, you'll understand the characters right away. I mean, she nails Dr. Aphra from the previous run so good. So yeah, there's my Dr. Aphra spiel.
Yeah. And also for those that like, if you don't have a local comic book shop, you don't know where Marvel Unlimited app, they're all on there. All the Star Wars and I don't know, $8 to $12. I don't know what it is, but you know, you can read every Star Wars canon comic as well as diving into Marvel stuff too. So if you don't want to commit to that's how I was reading them. And it was a good way to do it. So
yeah, that's a great call, because sometimes it's hard too. If like, okay, I'm going to get into Dr. Aphra, I got to buy 30 issues. Like, then I have to keep track of where they are and like physically read them. Like if you're doing it weekly, it's great. But yeah, if you're trying to catch up, which they do have the trade paperbacks too, where they kind of combine the arcs into one and you can find those, as well, but Marvel Unlimited is clutch.
Yes. All right, Travis, this was such a blast. I want to give you the chance to tell people about your podcast, where they can find it and find you online and anything else you're up to.
Yeah, for sure. I'm on Instagram at Force Time Pod. I'm probably most active on Instagram. Also have Twitter at Force Time Pod. Same handle on both. Yeah, have some couple fun episodes coming up. Obviously, the Mandalorian one that we just talked about, we're going to have that releasing. And then next week's Mandalorian, we'll cover that. Like I said, Alyssa Long returning to the show. Cannot wait for that. Probably going to take a little bit of a breather, because man, keeping up with these weekly, doing podcasts weekly with the three kids and everything, it's a lot. So going to take probably a little bit of a break, but have some really fun stuff planned here in the next month or two as well. Have another episode of Star Wars and Pop Culture coming with one of my good friends. And yeah, just a lot of other fun stuff. So yeah, you can find me on Instagram or Twitter at Force Time Pod.
Cool. Again, thank you for doing this. I will close this out here. I like to rate and review. I like to remind you guys to rate and review us on iTunes and Spotify, preferably 5 stars. Also, please subscribe, because we're going to be here every single week with some sort of coverage. And you know, we're gonna have our off season here pretty soon. No Marvel shows or Star Wars shows. So we have some fun stuff planned too. So if you subscribe, that stuff will come straight to your phone. It's super convenient. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Star Wars Pod. Also, we have a little Discord community going on, so if that's something you're interested in, you can hit us up and we will get you a link. But that is all we got for you guys. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time. Bye.
Bad baby. No, it was crazy.